Artist for Artists. Transcendence München. Commitment to Contemporary Dance. Side Talks. Let's talk about dance. The Transcendence Podcast. Today, choreographer Cherin Oran and dance scholar Sofia Munoz Caniero.
As I told you, we were going to be here today talking about your work as choreographer and artist in a broad sense. So I would like to start with a question. How do you start being a dancer and choreographer?
I started at a very young age, very unprofessionally, let's say.
Wow.
When I was a little kid, my parents always tell the stories that I was every evening selling tickets to them when they come back from work. And then I was taking a hairbrush as a microphone to my hand.
Really?
And I was like performing for them, like either the song that I was making up or like what I learned in the kindergarten. And that continued as well as I grew up a little bit with my cousins. I was like making choreographies for them and little sketches, or like people from my classroom, like friends from classroom, and then we were performing it in the breaks or again to the family. And but unfortunately I had a heart operation, which doesn't have any effect on me at the moment, when I was 6 years old. So I was banned from being physical actually for a very long time. But during the high school, I was a member of a dance AG, and I was kind of feeling there, okay, I really want to do this for life. And then with the great support of my parents, with my family, which I also have to mention, because in Turkey, it's not really, dance doesn't seem, or like being a dancer or choreographer, being an artist, is not seen as a job or as a profession. So basically they really supported me, and I studied 1 year in Turkey in modern dance after high school. And then I moved to Salzburg to study contemporary dance and choreography in SEED, in Salzburg Experimental Academy of Dance. But again, like, who is a dancer? What is dance? I can't say I start to become a dancer studying in SEED, because I think I always had this interest and passion in me somehow since very early ages. And I think slowly and slowly I just build up interest and experience and everything. And I think every day we are still becoming the choreographers, the dancers, the artists that we are becoming day by day with learning. So yeah, so that's I think how I could answer this. But then after, of course, like in SEED, I studied professionally. After that, yeah, I worked in a theater in Salzburg, in Toyhaus Theater, as an ensemble member there. Then I moved to Munich to become a freelance choreographer and dancer.
And why did you decide to move to Munich?
Well, it's a simple answer, love. Because back then, my boyfriend, now my husband, was living in Munich. I came here without knowing anybody, which was, of course, scary and a lot of changes, because I wasn't freelancing before that. I also quit the theater. I also quit my life, which I built up for 8 years there, and I came here. But yeah, it happened to be the amazing place for me. And now thinking back then, like, I think it was a great thing, actually, that I came to Munich. Yeah.
Do you remember your first experiences with dance when you came?
One of my teachers from SEED, Mia Lawrence, who is also a choreographer, who was also a choreographer in Munich, she gave me the contact of Simone Schulte. Exactly. So she said, like, Simone is doing great work for and with kids. You should get in touch to her. Maybe she would be interested in what you are doing. So I contacted Simone. So yeah, like that was like my first encounter. And Simone is like such an amazing being anyway, such a supporter, such an initiator, such a dance lover. Somehow she trusted and believed in me from the very first moment on. And yeah, this is kind of my first, I think, entry to the whole thing. She immediately told me about the funding system here. We applied for the Beförderung for Heimatlos. Yeah, so it was a really nice kind of like entrance to the scene through her, because she also knows a lot. She knows, and she knows everybody. So she was introducing me also to a lot of interesting people. Yeah, that, and then also when I couldn't get the Beförderung, I was still writing to Tanständen, of course. I didn't know with who I was writing, but I applied back then for Gastrecht. And they gave me this Gastrecht, which was very nice, so I could rehearse here for a month with like very little amount of the fee. And of course, Tanständen also gave a big first step to me. By providing me a rehearsal space. I didn't know it back then how hard it is, because I was coming from a theater. We always had our studios. But now, knowing how actually it's hard to get rehearsal spaces in Munich, I'm realizing actually back then it was a big help. I basically created all my performances here in this studio, because Heimatlos, Sagmal, Elefant aus dem Ei, and even Rush Hour, I think, yeah, these four performances, I think, are the ones that I did always with Gastrecht here. And then I think around between Elefant aus dem Ei and Rush Hour, I think we were talking about me becoming a Mitglied, because like I'm here anyway and I'm very active in the scene. And yeah, so like after I became a Mitglied, and yeah, of course, and then I produced all my performances here in Tanzdenes.
Because you were talking about your work and what you were rehearsing, and I wanted to ask you how you choose the themes of your works, because the themes of your projects and performance are very, very much diverse, like migration, Heimatlos, or partnership, and in Ein Liedermann performed this duet,
or relationships.
Relationships also, yes. Or also the relationship between man and machine in Rush Hour.
They're all personal issues, I can say. All the themes are... I never, I think, get inspired from a concept and then work with that. Something happens to me, or I experience something, or I observe something in the society which deeply moves me. And that starts to boil somehow as an idea, as an idea or as an experience that I would love to translate in the language of performing arts. Let's take relationships, for example, my very last performance. I think it was very touching and very... I saw a lot of people crying in the audience, like in the loops. I received very beautiful drawings, messages, I don't know, many different things. We put a guest book, really nice notes there, questions. And that's and this piece, I think, became this way, or I chose the topic of relationship, or like broken relationships, because, or how relationships are breaking, because I had a very hard time with my partner in the last 3 years. So it is a living process for me. Like my life and the pieces that I'm doing are like really, they are not really separating from each other. I mean, I can tell all the pieces, like from what you mentioned, from Heimatlos until relationships related with performances for young audiences, mostly them actually. Everything has something to do with my own life. So, like Sagmal was about the language, you know, like what if you don't speak the same language, how you can still communicate, is about my my struggle with German, since like living in German speaking countries since 16 years and like not being able to speak it properly, you know, like I mean, I speak German and I understand German, but it is not as deep as it can be. Or, I don't know, Elefant aus dem Ei is like somehow related with my grandmother, like becoming someone in somebody's life and losing this person. Schönanders is about being different. I really feel sometimes like an alien in a society where artists are feeling sometimes when you are talking to someone who is not in the art field, like you really feel... okay, there is really something wrong with my lifestyle, or they make you feel that way.
Yeah,
so that's Shan, and that is about like coming from that, or being from being Turkish in a European society, like being other. So yeah, like Stories in Blue is about parenthood stories. Like it's everything has something to do with my life in that period, actually, when I'm creating the piece, the urge. Of course.
Amazing. Yes.
The urge of dance in the Corona times. So yeah.
And you were saying that it's based on your experiences and that's how you get to a theme and you start creating. And how would this manifest in the creation of movement or phrases or choreographic work?
I think this is changing a bit.
Changing.
I think like it's like when did I come to like when I mean I choreograph since I was studying in SEED basically. There I have a choreographic degree. Let's say I'm doing choreographies of my own since 12, 13 years now. The way that I choose the topics were always same. Like they were always personal. But how I translate that into a choreographic language, how they manifest in the moment, I think changed on the way. I would say I have images. I have really pictures in my head, usually. I see things. I see, I imagine already when I start to write the concept, I'm already imagining some tasks, some feelings, some moments. And they are my first grabs. They usually don't stay in the piece. They usually are the only first week to-dos, which gives, they mostly don't function or doesn't look as good as I was imagining. But they open new doors to new directions. And I try to stay open in the first 2-3 weeks to that new path, then it becomes the piece that it is. Because there is this first image, it's translated to through the body of the dancer to something, it leads to something else, and then it cooks slowly and slowly and slowly, and then we arrive somewhere which in the end becomes the piece itself, basically. Wow. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so I wanted to ask you about the different formats of your performances, because you choose this. It is very interesting that you have this different tools and techniques of creating and or generating a way of accessing your performances. What is the idea behind of creating these different accesses?
I think the first breaking point was the necessity of getting out of the theater, out of the black box. Because I think from then on, like from which let's say it, I think the first piece that I did in the public space was Husfra Trofea. I think from Husfra Trofea, like, or like before that, this breaking point happened where I felt, okay, contemporary dance is reaching to a very limited audience profile. And it is very, it can be much more than that. It can be much bigger than that. And I really wanted to share it with many, many more people. Not in terms of amount only, but also in terms of who is watching you? Where I feel I want to reach to much more different people, not to elite profile. And I think this was the first break, because it's also like we give so much, like when the creative process, at least for me, a creative process is our lives. Like we are like really spending our lives in the studios, literally. We are performing only 1 hour maybe, but that 1 hour is created at least 6 weeks to 8 weeks in the studio before that choreographer always lives with the idea. So it's like a year process for me always, at least to realize a piece. And then if it's only reaching out to this limited profile, limited amount of people, then I was questioning after rush hour especially, why? Like, why do I do it? And then it came, like, I heard about the Dancing Plague of Strasbourg from 1518. And then, like, the things again started to cook. And then it came out the idea of public space performance, going out. So you cannot bring all these people to the theater. You go out and dance. And then once I went out, I actually realized, I think, there are many more ways to do things. And I'm always coming out also with these new ideas, you know, okay, like 4 hours loop, like why, you know, why do we do it like 4 times? Because it's the same piece actually in reality, it's the same choreographic structure performed 4 times after each other. But then I'm curious about how it's going to exhaust the piece itself because of relationships are exhausting themselves within the time, and how it's about how we deal with this time effect in the relationships. And then I'm ending up with having a very a new way of like presenting the piece, like the urge, the same thing, like simultaneous premiere in 3 different cities. I mean, same with Fliege and the Werther. Okay, children are sitting in one side, we are on the stage. It's always the same, but why not going to their all daily spaces to break that code a little bit in that room, which is a classroom, you know? So. And it's working amazing, like this interaction with kids in their classroom, because we break all the boundaries and we do everything what they shouldn't do. We are jumping on the tables, we are crawling under the tables, like chairs of the teacher, and like throwing everything around. So it's like, it's amazing, like to kind of break those limits, I think. And I think that's why they all are different in different format, and like they are all looking different.
So it's like kind of always looking for ways to expand the limits.
Exactly, moving borders, like my borders. Yeah, like my company's name. Okay. Exactly, like so. It's like it's to move the borders. I think, yeah.
Yes, I wanted to ask you if that was the idea behind moving borders. If the idea of accessibility. It was behind
also. Definitely. And we were searching with Simone, with Carolina, with my partner now in GBR. We were searching names. Yeah, Gerenoran works, like company Gerenoran and Co. Like there's all these like classic ones, but then I was like, no, I really want something like which describes what we are trying to do with these performances or with these projects, with anything that we do. And yes, it came to my mind, you know, like this, there is this moment, you know, yes. Like, so it just came. And then I remember I was writing it to Simone, to Karina, to Christoph, and like to some of my colleagues as well, what they think, and everybody, because until then, when I was giving some suggestions, they were like, nah, or like there were some of them were always like, and then when I said this, everybody thumbs up. And then like, I was like, okay, we found it, because I really think moving borders really defines what we are doing perfectly because of this format thing. First of all, for example, like we are always trying to move the border of the theater room, expand this, and then do different things. And yes, for me, definitely moving borders means exactly making dance more accessible for people, so there is no more border that everybody can come and or like be there and see it. And yeah, I always have a personal issue with borders, like being from Turkey, still having a Turkish passport, and being struggled a lot with borders, with literal borders. I think I like the fact that this is also now in my company's name.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it fits very, very well, like to what we are doing.
And you mentioned already many times the urge.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit about it, and because I also read that it's also going on.
Urge has its own life now with 3 different casts, and it's actually becoming like what I was imagining as a very first thing. So the urge is the way that I was dealing with, let's say, COVID as a dancer and choreographer, since we are talking about the personal experiences. It's like in the very first format that we worked on, it had layers, different layers that we all were dealing with in the times of lockdown. Basically, it contains the physical material of the lockdown improvisations as a movement material. It contains the simultaneous experience of this, because we experienced this as a whole world, maybe with a little delay, like first it started in China, then Europe, then Latin America, and then, but we all were on the same boat, but being in different places, so it has this layer. And it has a digital layer, of course, with the streaming, because like we were all somehow obliged to share our work through video and like through screens and through this 2D experiences somehow. And feeling connected and not physically being connected. Like we kind of like worked with all these layers. And the premiere, when we couldn't perform in front of the audience, still it was not allowed when we did the premiere of The Urge. When we premiered at the same time Berlin, Munich and Köln with three different casts, the same choreography, it became like it was very rich in terms of all these like layers that that it had to have. Technically, I think we could have done better, but it's also a matter of money. It's also a matter of experience back then. Like I think there was no example yet, or at least that I know. Probably there is in the world, but like at least that I didn't know any of the experiences, like any of the examples that streaming from three same channels at the same time in one shot. So this was something I think like we tried and tried to do our best. And but then it all, like then we also start to perform in the public spaces, which it's supposed to be, because the very first idea was taking these kitchen, living room, bedroom improvisations of dancers during the first lockdown. In a way, they're defeating the lockdown with their dance, taking those improvisations and bringing it to big squares. That was my idea, like dancing it in the big squares. And this started to happen, of course, after the lockdowns and when we started to tour it in Munich. And now what's happening is that we can tour the piece without maybe touring the whole cast. Like we are, for example, and that's what we did. So there is now a Czech cast in Czech Republic. There is a Slovak cast in Slovakia, and they are touring the piece in these countries. I think the Czech cast even performed more than us, and now they are going to tour as well with the Tanik Praha, with the festival. Also, like from here, we can also maybe take a sideway to the topic of sustainable touring, for example. Because this is also like kind of my idea how to tour in the future. Does it make sense to fly six people to somewhere and like performing twice and coming back? Because now what we are trying to achieve with The Urge is like to actually create a cast, create a dancers group of this performance within 10 days and then or within 1 week. And then they keep on performing it there without us going there.
Challenging.
Yeah, I did that also with Elephant Aus dem Ei. There is a Turkish cast of Elephant Aus dem Ei in Turkey, and they are also touring it a lot to disadvantaged countries. And this is something that I can't do every time that there is a request, you know, that I fly four people there and then like, you know, it also doesn't make sense.
Yes.
But now they are, I think they performed already 20 times or even more, maybe like since we replicated the piece. Yeah. Now there is also in China, we are working now, putting the cast together. So with ISK, with Art Space for Kids in Shanghai, and they have a huge network in China. We are doing a collaboration now. There will be a cast there. Amazing. Performing Elephant Aus dem Ei.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is my sustainable way of touring. Sorry, I took a bit of off track of the question, but yeah,
The
Urge. But because this is also where Urge evolved as
yes,
well.
Yes,
you know?
And it was something that came from The Urge.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
As a format.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's also very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you briefly about young audiences. If there's also the motivation behind of this accessibility to bring dance to broader audiences. or it came from a different place?
It came from a different place. It came from a very, actually, a coincidental place. When I was studying in SEED, I was together with a dancer. And he was working in Toy House Theatre. And because I was going there to see the shows, to see the rehearsals, giving feedback sometimes, the director of the theatre was interested in me as well. And she came to see a show of mine in SEED. And then she had this interest to create that me and Felipe, back then my boyfriend, that we create a performance for young audiences. Somehow she smelled it. Mm-hmm. And we created Trag mich back then, mm-hmm. which got awarded and then had a lot of visibility in Austria back then. This was 12 years ago. And it was, I think, in 2009, probably. Yeah, it was in 2009. In Toy House Theater, I created this piece with Felipe Salazar and I started to perform for young audiences. Mm. And yeah, that was it. I fell in love. It was the most beautiful experience that I ever had until then, performance experiences and or creativity experience. And then there I was really having a big interest from then on to create for young audiences and to dance for young audiences because of many different reasons. But yes, then, for example, I was talking about this questioning how much it's worth it that I create a piece like Rush Hour and people who are watching it anyway knows the problematic that I'm dealing with. They already watched so many dance performances. What is the sense of it, you know? And with kids, I never have this feeling. Mm-hmm. When I perform for children, I always feel they are getting inspired. Mm. They are finding different ways to look at things. They are not only with my performances, of course, but art can do this to children, I think, in general. And I'm very happy to be part of that, you know, to be part of their life in that sense. And that totally makes sense for me, whether I'm in a black box, whether I'm in a classroom, whether I'm making a workshop for them. I never wanted to give up on that. I always wanted to create for kids. And then, of course, this accessibility aspect is also very fulfilling, definitely.
I have one last question.
Sure.
That is also a much more specific question. And it is about the role of touch in your choreographic work, physical touch. As a choreographer, or maybe in some of your performances, and of course I'm thinking about relationships, but also performance like I Need a Man to Perform This Duet from 2015, when, for example, you cross the scenario blindfolded and start to touch the audience, and then you embrace the other dancer and a choreography started to unfold. So I just wanted to know a little bit about, just briefly, if touch plays an important role in your
this
work.
This is a very interesting question, I must say. As you can see in my eyes, I start to question myself because no one asked me this before and I never asked this myself before.
Oh.
No, really, I didn't. And you are right, and actually now I'm realizing with your question that I also have in Fliegende Wörter a section called Suche, and there I'm also blindfolded. And yeah, it's true, in I Need a Man to Perform This Duet, I also did that. I remember the first row I was scanning with touching. Actually, no. I mean, it doesn't play. Of course, it plays a role. Obviously, mm-hmm. we are talking about it right now. And in two pieces, I'm blindfolded and touching people. So there must be there must be something about it. But it's not a conscious role playing, let's mm-hmm. say, because I was never. I don't remember or I can't recall a moment either in a process or, in the conceptual discussions, the role of touch. Mm. So it doesn't definitely it doesn't play a role in order to play a role. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for me. like in relationships, of course, like it's a very touchy and it's a very physically touchy piece. I mean, so there were tasks around touching, leaving the touch, and like there were a lot of material built from that perspective. But if I think about all my performances, it's not, we actually don't have like, we don't have like thoughts around touch, but you're right, it's very present. It's
because interesting. You said that you worked, you had little exercises when you worked for relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
Like regarding the whole, touch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like one section is called, I mean, it's not written somewhere, but it's for us, like you name the scenes. Mm-hmm. For us, one scene is Touch Me But Don't.
Okay.
It's like this, like it's something pleasant, which is starts very gentle and nice in the beginning, which is like, which is a transformation in the first part of relationships. But then it becomes something manipulative and it becomes something unpleasant. Mm-hmm. And then you still want to touch, but you don't want to touch, or like you don't want him or her to touch you, but then you do it yourself to the other person as well. So it's like all these ideas we were playing with, this like touch me but don't. I don't know if you saw the piece, but like it's like this, the peak, like before the peak, like which transforms into like a very aggressive, almost fight scene. And this section is called Touch Me But Don't.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I think we are on time. Thank you.
More podcasts and interviews about dance in Munich can be found at the TTMAG on tanztendenz.de. The Tanztendenz podcast Side Talks is supported by the National Performance Network Stepping Out, funded by the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media in the context of the initiative Neustart Kultur, Hilfsprogramm Tanz, as well as by the Cultural Department of the City of Munich.